This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Bird brains are about the size of a nut, maybe smaller in some cases. So you would think that birds have to be fairly simple creatures with limited capacity. That is just not the case. New research shows that despite their small brain size, birds are actually among the most intelligent members of the animal kingdom. Their brains are packed with neurons and complex pathways, giving them the capacity to be expert problem solvers and mappers. Some species even have their own social networks and cultural traditions. My guest today has profiled a range of these winged beasts in her new book, The Genius of Birds. She's going to be talking in Raleigh tonight, but first joins me in the studio. Jennifer Ackerman is a science writer who contributes to publications like Scientific American, National Geographic, and The New York Times. And she's on our program now. Jennifer Ackerman, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
What got you going on bird brains?
Well, I've been a bird watcher since I was a child. My father took me bird watching on the C&O Canal in Washington, D.C. And we also had a pet budgerigger named Grigri, who was really quite an adept problem solver. So these two things, I've always thought birds were resourceful. But it was really in the last 10 years or so that the studies began to come out about Betty, the New Caledonian crow, who could bend a wire into a hook to get a little bucket of food from the bottom of a tube. And there was Alex, who partnered with Harvard scientist Irene Pepperberg to really show that birds have intellectual abilities that rival primates. And I got so interested in this idea that there was a lot more going on in terms of the cognitive capacities of birds, and I really wanted to delve into it.
We're going to talk more about these, some of the tool-making abilities, the ability to create social networks, and how that benefits birds. But let's talk about size, because, again, we think about this as being kind of brain capacity, and we like to think that, you know, size matters, although the human brain has been shrinking significantly over the last 10,000 years, and there's plenty of evidence of that. But the fact is they pack a lot into a small place. Tell us what's going on with their brains.
Yeah, so we did think that because bird brains were so small and primitive, we thought they were very primitive, that they were really capable of only the simplest mental processes. But the two things, the birds actually, many species have brains that are surprisingly large for their body size. It's called relative brain size, and it's true of our species too. And when it comes to intelligence, what really matters is the density of neurons. And a Brazilian neuroscientist has actually counted the neurons in bird brains and found that they pack incredibly high density. Corvids and parrots have probably twice as many neurons in their brains as primate brains of the same size, and about four times as many neurons as mammal brains of the
total
same size.
Numbers now. We're not talking about per square centimeter. We're talking about total number
total
of neurons.
Total numbers, right, exactly.
Yeah.
And another thing that really matters in intelligence is the connections between neurons. And in that way, bird brains resemble ours in many ways. They're wired together in complex pathways, just as our brains are.
And not always hardwired. They can learn.
Exactly. Yes. They can learn in many different ways.
Tell us about this, because you talked about your research in Barbados and a biologist there who actually devised a scale for measuring bird intelligence.
Yes. His name is Louis Lefebvre. He's a professor at McGill University, and he devised the first scale of intelligence for birds. And it was based on the idea that innovative birds that are smart, do unusual and complex things in the wild. And he pored through probably 75 years worth of ornithological journals to find about 2,300 reports of these very unusual behaviors in birds. And he organized them by bird family and then ranked them according to their capacity for this kind of innovative behavior. And what were the smartest birds at the top of the scale? No surprise, they were corvids, parrots, birds of prey, gulls and herons, and even some small birds like sparrows, tits, and finches.
And we think about the ability of birds to create songs, and I think I've seen some research just over the past couple of decades about the ingenuity and the improvisational qualities of bird songs, that they weren't hardwired. So that's one of the things that I think we've known about.
Yes. So birds learn their songs the same way that we learn language. Mm-hmm. It's called vocal learning, and it's very rare in the animal world. There's some wonderful work going on at Duke in vocal learning, studying bird song and its analogies to human language learning.
So birds have to hear, then they have to be able to repeat, and the parents have to know. And so is there active teaching going on, or are they just picking up cues from the environment and deciding which are important?
Well, it's very important for birds to have tutors. And so the process of vocal learning, as you say, it's about imitating, practicing, honing your skills, experimenting. Birds have a period of in their youth, where they do something very similar to human baby babble. It's called subsong, and they just sing notes in different, you know, random orders, and so over time they learn to really refine their song skills and learn the particular songs of their species.
One of the very interesting things I learned in reading your book was that bird songs, we think about them mostly in terms of mating behaviors. I guess if you ask anybody why do they do it, you think, well, I guess mating and maybe to warn of danger. But then there's a question of why birds would sing outside of mating season. And you found out that it's actually drug addiction.
Exactly. So the big question was, well, okay, we understand why birds sing in the spring. You know, they're drawing a mate, they're establishing their territory. But why do they sing in the fall? And scientists have found that singing their songs well creates a kind of bolus of rewarding chemicals. They experience pleasure, and it's dopamine and opioids that flood their brains when they sing their songs well. So they do it in the fall, yeah, as you say, for the drug hit.
They're just getting high. And the other thing is, what was also interesting is that those songs that are sung out of mating season apparently deliver more dope than when they're finding a mate.
That's right. And it's just one of the great, kind of wondrous phenomenon of the birdsong world.
Tool making as well. Tell us about the New Caledonian crow.
So this was probably the highlight of my research was going to a little island in the Southwest Pacific called New Caledonia, which is the home of what is arguably the smartest bird on the planet, the New Caledonian crow. This bird is an expert problem solver, and it's also renowned for its capacity to make and use its own tools, complex tools on par really with primates like chimps and orangutans.
Tell us about the tools.
Well, it's the only species other than humans to make hook tools like that Betty the New Caledonian crow made. And they make them in the wild. And these are sticks with a little hook on the end that they use to poke into holes to grab grubs. And their grubs are a fabulous source of nutrition. So it's a very satisfying use of a tool. They also make tools from pandanus leaves, it's a common plant on the island. And these leaves have little barbs on the edge of them, and the birds use the barbs in a similar way to grab grubs. And the really interesting thing is that they seem to have different styles of pandanus toolmaking in different parts of the island. And these styles of toolmaking are passed down over generations, which, if you think about it, the faithful transmission of tool design, that's a very good definition of culture.
That's cultural transmission right there. And right. It is fascinating that it is learned behavior and passed down and not just something that becomes obvious to each bird. Oh, I've got to get, you know, so however, and by the way, no small feat to figure out the grub is down there around the bend and this is also around the bend. That's abstract thinking.
Correct. And also they seem to have an image in their heads of the tool before they actually take it from the leaf. So that making these tools requires very methodical cuts in the leaf, which they do step by step by step before they actually remove the fully crafted tool from the leaf. So it is it's an astonishing complexity of tool making.
A lot of social behavior, too, that is learned. Maybe one of the better ways to describe how this works, I think, an example in the book was mobbing, that some birds which chase, for instance, cuckoos out of their nest or other birds that they find are pesty will sort of mob, you know, in big numbers. But that they can learn to get rid of these birds even if they're not hardwired. They're not necessarily a hardwired enemy. They can learn about new enemies.
Right. And one of the really interesting experiments that went on in this area was by John Marsliff at the University of Washington. And he had his researchers wear a caveman mask when they caught crows and banded them. And catching and banding a crow is a fairly traumatic experience for the crow. So what Marsliff discovered was that when he and his group returned to this area where they had banded the crows, wearing the mask, they were mobbed by not just the crows that they banded, but their family members, their offspring. And this happened year after year after year, up to 9 years later. Wow. They were still mobbing these caveman masks.
So remembering some form of recall. Also, ravens, a unique example of animals with empathy.
Yes, this is really fascinating work done at the University of Vienna. And ravens live in, they're very social birds, and they live in groups. And it's not a peaceful kind of harmonious existence. They have a lot of fights and altercations. And what the researchers found is that the ravens that are a victim of a conflict of some kind will be consoled by their mate or their ally. And this is usually involves some kind of preening or twining bills, which is the kind of bird equivalent of kissing.
This also, and so as we're listening to this, I think we're all trying to get our heads around, well, what's behind this? How do they, we know kind of empathy when it works at the human level is some sense of putting ourselves in the position of the other. I mean, I think that's how we understand empathy in primates, or at least humans, right?
That's correct. And it's called theory of mind, which is the ability to understand that another being has thoughts, desires of their own that differ from your own thoughts and desires. And we thought this was uniquely human, but it turns out that several species of birds are capable of this kind of empathetic response.
And that doesn't always result in empathy. It can also result in making a better thief, on the theory that it takes a thief to know a thief, right?
That's right. This is characteristic of the Western scrub jay, which is also known as the California scrub jay. And these are a caching species. They hide their food and save it for later. And these birds will, if they think that another bird is watching them who might pilfer their stash, they actually change their behavior. So they will cache in a much less visible place, or they'll make a fake cache and, you know, pretend to hide it somewhere and then move the food somewhere else. And they'll only do this if they think that a competitor is watching. And they'll only do it if they themselves have been pilferers in the past.
So
that takes a thief to know a thief.
It's amazing that they make this kind of transference, though. Again, first of all, I find it incredible that we as humans can do this. This is an incredible capacity to be able to put yourself. It's game theory, right?
Yes, it is.
Be able to put yourself in the other person's position. But the idea that you've done this and you know exactly how this trick as a thief works, and that's probably what that bird's up to, then adapting your behavior to fool the bird.
Yes, it's really extraordinary, sophisticated social behavior.
We talk about social behavior, too. It has a lot of advantages. Among them, in the case of the southern pied babbler, it turns out that it's a risky business, because them gathering food for them is risky business. So they hire or somehow get lookouts, right?
Right. So southern pied babblers, they live in the Kalahari Desert, and they're a cooperative breeding species. So they live in very close-knit social groups. And they do live a very dangerous life. They feed on the ground, and they have predators that arrive from the air, like eagle owls, and predators arrive from the ground, like the mongoose or puff adders. So it is a risky business. And as a result, what has evolved is behavior. They have a sentinel who forgoes his own foraging and keeps an eye out for predators on behalf of the others. And when it sees one, it will emit this kind of sharp cry.
Sounds something like this, according to the internet. By the way, that stunned the meerkat, who wasn't expecting to hear that from the sentinel.
There's another clever bird that lives near the pied babbler called the fork-tailed drongo that knows how to imitate that sentinel babbler warning cry. And it will do so to make the birds scatter, and then it will come in and dive in for their mealworms and the other things that they're feeding on.
It uses the warning cry to scare away the bird so it can steal their food.
Right.
This is a very smart bird. Clever stuff. And of course, I think maybe we've seen or known of this behavior birds who know how to crack nuts, for instance, and figured that out too.
Yes. New Caledonian crows can do that. And many kind of birds can drop nuts on pavement and split it open. It's not, strictly speaking, tool use, but it's clever behavior.
What were some of the – I mean, these are among the many great surprises for me in this book. What were some of the big takeaways for you and the big surprises for you?
One of the surprising families of birds for me was the bowerbirds of Australia and New Guinea. And they are capable of a kind of artistic intelligence, a sense of beauty or aesthetics. They build beautiful bowers to draw their females. And these are carefully crafted arches, and they're decorated with colored objects. And one species of bowerbird, the spotted bowerbird, actually built its bower next to the house of a stained glass artist. And its bower was filled with little shards of stained glass that were arranged by color. It was just like a mosaic. That stunned me, that they have this kind of artistic sensibility.
Well, that brings us to what we can learn about ourselves, because, of course, we do things that seem amazing to us, but then they may have this adaptive value. I mean, obviously, any bird with that much ingenuity and skill is a bird worth mating with, right? And so I mean, it may or may not be the aesthetic pleasure of that place. It may tell you something about the brains of that bird.
Right. And that is true for this kind of artistry in bowerbirds. It's true for song learning in songbirds. It's a measure of intelligence in the male, usually, who's doing the building. But it's the female who's judging this. And she has a tremendous capacity to evaluate the male's performance, whatever it is. And so she's, in a way, she's shaping these cognitive abilities in her species.
Making sure that the right genes get passed down.
Exactly.
And the dumb guys can just find their own nest and live on their own. What about speciation? What's interesting to me, too, is the number of species and how quickly birds, first of all, adapt, but then also sort of create new species.
Yes. And, you know, what's interesting, I think, is what's happening now, given the change in the human wrought changes in the environment. We are creating a world that is well suited to the generalists among the bird populations, the birds that are adaptable to human environments. And, you know, the house sparrow is a very good example. It has a genius for using man-made materials. There's a study showing that they like to use old cigarette butts to line their nests because the nicotine drives away parasites. and some songbirds are very adaptable. They will change their songs in order to so that they're heard over traffic noises. So those birds are thriving and they're speciating. The birds that are going to be suffering, I think, are the specialists. And they are birds that are adapted to a very unique niche or habitat. A good example is the species that live in the mountains of New Guinea are particularly adapted to temperature ranges that are associated with a particular elevation on the mountains. And those, over time, those ranges, as the globe warms, they are moving higher and higher on the mountain, and pretty soon they're going to go off into the sky, and the birds will have no place to live. And the other birds that are at risk in this way are migrants, and they're dependent on food sources at staging grounds along their migratory journeys, and those can be affected by global warming.
Well, as your work in aggregating all of this wonderful new research demonstrates, that would be a terrific loss to us, given the amazing capacities of these birds.
It really would, and I think it's a kind of incumbent on us at this point to make sure that our children and our children's children get to see and learn from the birds that we see and learn from.
Let's use some of that stuff in our big craniums to see if we can't fix things instead of making things worse. Jennifer Ackerman, what a pleasure.
Thank you. Such a pleasure to be here.
Science writer who authored a new book, The Genius of Birds. She's going to be at Quail Ridge Books in Raleigh tonight at 7 o'clock. We've got details at our website, stateofthings.org. So we talked about trees and then birds. Now let's talk about the fish, shall we, on the State of Things. Stay with us.